This Week in Radio Tech, episode 223, is brought to you by the Telos HX6 talk show system. Perfect for request line callers and serious newsmakers alike. Six lines and two digitally clear Telos hybrids in one rack unit. The Telos HX6. Also by Lavo, maker of the new crystal clear virtual radio console. Intuitive, progressive, and focused. Crystal clear is the radio console with a multi-touch touchscreen interface. And by Axia, consoles, mixing engines, intercoms, phones, audio processors. Only Axia connects to so much so easily. We're talking to Rob Chickering at the Kid Craddock Morning Show. Rob is the engineer and ops guy who makes this syndicated radio and TV show work so well. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. I'm so delighted you're here. We've got another show. I mean, I'm excited about every show, but this is going to be great. This is the show where we talk about broadcast audio technology and everything from, you know, the microphone to the beacon at the top of the tower. And nowadays, more and more, there's not a tower involved, but there's internet connections, maybe satellite. Who knows what there is between, you know, the content creation and the listener. But as broadcast engineers, it's our job to make sure it gets there and sounds great. That it's not our job to make sure the content is compelling, but at least the audio can't quality of the audio can't take away from that compelling content. So that's our job. And that's what we talk about here. Well, we're going to talk about some incredible content creation today, a very successful radio show, and how that works, how the engineering and operations work for that show. We'll bring in our guest in just a minute. But first, let's introduce the best-dressed engineer in radio. It's my friend and yours from Manhattan, New York, Chris Tobin. Hello, Chris. Welcome in.
Oh, thank you, Kirk. I'm doing well. Yes, I'm actually across the river from Manhattan today in New Jersey. So in the Garden State that smells so lovely on a day like today.
You can see Manhattan from where you are.
Actually, I can, yes. I can see. It's not up close. It's in the distance, but I can see the skyline. And actually, today is very clear. It's very nice.
Now,
very nice day.
You know, to a guy who's not from New York, when I think of New Jersey, all I think of is the shore of the Hudson River?
There's the Hudson, yes.
Yeah, so I think all of New Jersey is right there.
You know what? For many people in this part of the region, yes.
It is.
That's pretty much how it goes. You go south of Staten Island, and it's like, where are we? Where is this? This is New Jersey? The two things about New Jersey, it's which exit do you get off, do you live at, and is that only part across the river, or is there more to it? Yeah, that's it. It's a tough area to live in.
Funny. All right. Well, Chris, you're an IP solutionist, and give us the two-sentence spiel. Give us the elevator speech on what that is.
Well, basically, I have 30 years of doing broadcast engineering, both radio and TV, and over the time, learned a lot about IP and found ways
to
use that.
It's for young children to learn something.
It's very easy for young children to learn. But then again, in broadcasting, we have no young children. So moving right along. So what I've gone out on my own and decided to start imparting my knowledge on others and help them out. And actually today I was working with a client who's looking at an over-the-top television video solution, IPTV. And actually we think we came up with something pretty cool for them. So
I hear this IP thing is going to work.
Well, you know, it's funny. I've had former employers of mine tell me that it was a unproven technology and it was not something that's going to be around a long time, and you know, ISDN and T1s are the way to go. And I was like, "Wow, they're out of a job right now, but that's okay."
There was a time when it was illegal to make a car that would go over some speed like 23 miles an hour because science had proven that the people would explode if they went faster than that.
That's true. I think that was a Model T, the brown version. I'm sorry, no,
oh, really?
You can only have it in one color, black.
That's right. Hey, let's bring in our guest. I'm delighted to bring in this guy, Rob Chickering. He's the VP of Operations and Engineering for Yay Networks. That sounds weird to say. Did I say it right?
No, you said it absolutely perfectly. Yay Networks.
Yay Networks. Rob, it's great to have you here. You know, I met you years ago. I guess I was demonstrating some Omnia processors, and you were you at Susquehanna in Dallas then?
It was probably between 95 and 2007, somewhere in there.
Probably a lot closer to 95, yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
That I'm sorry, not 95. No, I'm sorry, 2002, 3, 4, somewhere in there.
Yeah, that was right in the middle of when I was the engineering manager for the group in Dallas after Norm moved up to corporate, Norm Phillips.
Ah, okay. Well, good deal. Well, Rob, you have some history with some of my friends. why don't you give us the little the elevator speech on Rob Chickering? What are you doing in broadcast engineering?
Well, you guys know a guy named Marty Sachs, I think.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, Marty unfortunately gave me my start in engineering. I was a board op for WRC or WWRC when Greater Media purchased it from NBC back in, I want to say it was 83, 84, somewhere around there. And I became a board op running TalkNet overnight and then eventually running some of the midday shows on other shows and then kind of sauntered over to Marty and I said, hey, man, you know, need an intern? And he said, yeah. So Marty's favorite story about me is he handed me a box of wire numbers from the project that had been, you know, the old wire numbers. It was 1 through 33, 34 through 66, you know, the strips of numbers.
Yeah.
And he handed me a box that I think went up to close to 300 or 400. And none of them had been put back in the boxes. It was literally take a strip out, throw it in the pile kind of thing. And he goes, here. I need you to put all these back in the boxes. And he thought, for sure, this kid's going to leave. And I'll never see him again. And unfortunately for him, I completed the task of reassembling all the wire numbers, put them neatly back in the box, walked back up to him a couple hours later, and he went, okay, I think we can work with this kid. So, yeah, I owe a lot to Marty. So Marty taught me how to build studios, wire, patch bays, you know, good engineering practices were invented, I think, many of them at Greater Media under Smitty, and I got to learn from some of the best.
Wow, and this was in the D.C. area?
Yeah, that was in D.C., yeah, Washington, D.C. I was there between almost, gosh, I guess I started there as a board op in 84, 30 years ago, and left in around 92, 93, and moved down to Dallas.
Gotcha. Is the D.C. area where you call home? Is that where you're from?
Yeah, I grew up there, left, born and raised in the Maryland area there, and go back occasionally. Mom's moved up to Pennsylvania, so we don't have a place to go anymore. So,
well, Rob has some engineering stories to tell, including how he got connected up with Kid Craddock, a very famous name in broadcasting. Unfortunately, passed away a couple of years ago, and we'll see. You know, we'll get some of Rob's ideas on engineering, where he's been, where it's going, how a guy like Kid Craddock influenced. Doing cool things in the studio. We've got a new sponsor on This Week in Radio Tech, and that new sponsor is a slot for Axia. So we're up to three sponsors now, and those three sponsors are Telos, and all, which also we may talk about Omnia, also the folks at Lavo and Axia. And so right now I want to take just a moment before we get started in depth with Rob Chickering to tell you about the Telos HX6. This is a phone system that we've talked about here on the show before. I've got one at my radio stations in Mississippi. I've not installed it yet because I haven't been there now for almost 3 weeks. But when I go back, we'll be putting that system in. The Telos HX6 is, you know, I call it cheap and cheerful. It has great technology in it. It's fifth generation telephone hybrids, so your calls sound as good as POTS calls can possibly sound. Great technology in there, including Omnia audio processing. The HX6 is a six-line phone system, and instead of having just one telephone hybrid in it, it comes standard with two. So two telephone hybrids mean you can easily put two callers on the air. They can hear each other perfectly. No compromise there, no silliness, no squirreliness, no button mashing, as we've called it in the past, with older phone systems. And they can hear each other perfectly and, of course, both be on the air on your podcast, your radio station, whatever your television show, whatever you're doing. And you also have the possibility of running a show this way. You can have an expert guest, and you can lock that guest onto a hybrid so you can't accidentally remove that guest from the show. So let's say you're talking to the mayor or someone who's an expert in engineering or politics or school education, whatever the topic may be, lock that guest in, and then you take your listener callers one after another and put them on the air without fear of getting rid accidentally of your expert guest. And everybody can hear each other just fine. You could even have a remote reporter calling in with a report. These are great for calling in high school sports scores. You know, that's a big thing on Tuesday nights for basketball and Friday nights for basketball and football and almost every day of the week for baseball. You can, if you're a station that covers your local area, hey, get your stringers to call in to and provide you know, sports scores, maybe a highlight or two from the game, who did well, who didn't do well. So if you're not doing call-ins now, consider adding that to your repertoire of what the content is you can provide on your broadcast station. If you already are, if you've got an older phone system and you're having trouble with it, check out the Telus HX6. You control it with our VSET 6, which... Well, I got a VSET 12 right here. Looks like this, but it's a little smaller, the VSET 6 is. And you can easily see the caller ID, who's calling in. Great color screen. And again, the hybrids just sound absolutely terrific. Get the HX6 and the VSET 6 together for a price that's well under $4,000. May even be quite a bit less than that, depending on the discount you arrange with your dealer. They're available now. The HX6 does come with XLR connectors for audio ins and outs. It can create its own conferencing bridge inside, so you only have to supply one mix minus from your audio console. If you already have an Axia system at your station, then guess what? You can save a few dollars and get the IQ6. It's exactly the same as the HX6, but no XLR connectors on the back. It's all live wire. If you go to the website, check it out, please, at telos-systems.com. And then look for the HX6. There's also the IQ6 listed on there as well. You're going to enjoy it, and it works great. Put callers on the air, and, hey, maybe make your station sound better, caller depending. All right. Yeah.
Doesn't make the callers any better, right?
That's right. Rob, I know some studio there. Let's take a look at that studio shot again with Rob there. You've got a Telos phone controller off to the side of the console, Rob. What is that?
It's the NX. We stuck with analog here, so we've got standard old POTS lines coming in on our choke system. So we kept it old school. It helped me in the migration of the system. I didn't want to change too many things at once and be chasing phone issues as well as working out bugs when you do a rebuild. So I was able to put the NX system right on top of the 1A2 system we had running. I just paralleled the lines, and I had the phone system running in another room basically for a couple of weeks when we were able to test it out. And then in an adjacent room that's right over here, I'll show you.
Control room. Yep. There goes the camera. All right.
We were able to basically separate the two rooms. So this room still had a BMS Digital 26 in it when we were doing the construction. That room over there got completely transformed. It used to be a talk booth for Kelly Raspberry. We made it into a control room, and that basically was built from the ground up with Axia. So I was able to dry run a country night show that we had renting our studio out of there. So they were actually running on the NX phone system while we still were running 1A2 in here. So we basically had the two systems running tandem. And then the transition was I fed this board into that board, and we kind of ran like that for a little while. And then we transitioned from Next Gen to OpX BSI system. So we moved to BSI system in the two rooms. And then one weekend, we pulled the BMX Digital out, filled in the giant hole here. You can see this countertop kind of becomes black versus gray. Filled in the hole, dropped in the new... Literally, I didn't even cut the hole for the console. I put it on the tabletop, let Kid kind of figure out where he wanted it. And we had the room up. We had the room up and running in probably about 12 hours.
You know, I want to get a more thorough tour of your studio there in probably in the second half of our show. Let's backtrack a bit, because you started in you started in a bigger market. I mean, guys like me, and Chris Tobin started in big markets too. I started, in West Undershirt, Kentucky, right?
Yeah.
I kind of got started in Berea, Kentucky, at a little AM daytimer there. But so you kind of got your feet wet. You had good tutelage there, but you got your feet wet in a big market. Talk to me a bit about technology when you got started in the mid to late 80s in engineering. What are some of the things that you went through? What were the benefits or the detractions from the kind of stuff you were using back
then?
Gosh,
I think about then, and it's like so much easier to do things now. And I think that unfortunately is shown in the number of engineers that are around anymore. It took a lot of engineers to keep a radio station maintained. I mean, you had cart decks and turntables and reel-to-reel machines. I mean, literally, my job every other day was to go through and balance every tone arm in the building and to clean every tape head and then pull a 99 or a Delta machine out of the rack and give it a front to back. And, that kept you pretty busy just maintaining the mechanics of the building, and, analog Pyrenee consoles that had a, you know, a mix minus bus that was kind of created in the afterthought of, oh, we need to be able to feed phones a mix minus bus. So don't pull the telco module out of the console or you go off the air. And, you know, Orban, mic processing. And, you know, I mean, we had great stuff, but it took a lot to kind of keep things running, and it was a lot of maintenance and a lot of wire.
Chris Tobin, you got started around the same time, didn't you?
Yeah, I was in the Mark at 147, Stamford, Connecticut. So.
Oh, you were in Stamford, okay.
Stamford, Norwalk, actually. It was two diaries a season, which I think they still have two diaries. I don't think they're doing PPM up there yet.
No, probably not.
Yeah, but yeah, no, I thought about them. That's a great-looking studio. I mean, thank I've watched you. It a couple of times on a cable channel, so I get to see it from the other side, too.
Real proud of it. Yeah, this is when I started working here. I walked in this room, and I'll show you something else that's kind of cool.
So standing from the operator position are two...
Ah, Vox Pro. Big monitors, yeah.
Nice.
Again, that's Kid Craddock, you know, engineering head. He said, I want two giant screens. You know, I want everybody to be able to see Vox Pro because, you know, when you're playing a bit back or something, you can kind of see when it's ending or you can see where there's a pause. And he typically would have a computer with the internet on one and Vox Pro on the other, a call screener or something like that. So it's pretty neat to kind of keep the eye lines nice. You don't have too many monitors, but you can still kind of take a glance up and see what's going on the screens. And so, yeah, I walked in this room the first time back in 2007. It was July when I was interviewing with him, and I walked in here, I'm like, God, this is the biggest control room I've ever seen in my entire life. This room's like 40 by 40. And so, yeah, it's an enormous piece of furniture that's sitting in here. So we actually looked at, for a millisecond, changing out the furniture too. But I was like, man, I just love this furniture. It's built locally by a guy who does great furniture work. And I was like, why replace it? You know, it's another $20,000 or $30,000, $40,000 expense. I just didn't feel like, you know, why change it? We'll just adapt it to, you know, this Axia system, and it'll be perfect.
Hey,
that's great.
Rob, I want to ask you just a bit about your career before we move back into some more technical stuff, because the impression that I've had of you, the few times that I've run across you or heard of you or heard about you from some of your colleagues, it's always been very positive. And you've been with Greater Media. That's where you got your start with some good people there, Susquehanna. You spent some time with Cumulus, and most of the time has been spent in Dallas, but you've always seemed to be the kind of engineer who does well, who is respected. What you work hard, and the opinion that you give, people pay attention to what you say. And I mean, your management, if you say we got to spend the money on this, you know, they'll try to make it happen. Yeah, give us a little career advice on being an engineer, being flexible, working hard, learning your craft well. What's come about to be important to you?
Well, I think, you know, I got to go back to Marty again. I mean, he's taught me, engineers had a bad reputation in that period of pocket protector wearing guys with overall straps, and they just grunted along and never talked to anybody. And
Hey, now.
Hey, sorry. Cut too close there. But, I watched Marty work, and Marty was always really great with the air talent and news directors and GMs, salespeople, anybody got equal attention, and their needs were always met. It wasn't like, oh, this is the air studio, this is more important, I got to make sure that the salespeople have what they need to do their jobs. And I think I realized really quickly that, you know, to feel, you know, I wanted to be part of the staff, not just somebody who, you know, when something was broken, you know, they came to you. And I adopted a philosophy of, you know what, I'm going to do everything I can to contribute to the product through technology and my management style and my staff, rather than just waiting for something to break.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, it sounds like part of your philosophy was to be a proactive role, that you're not just a wheel in the cog, but the whole machine is important, and it's all got to work well.
You're at cause of the success. You know, you directly are assisting, you know, the talk show host or whatever by giving them a new piece of technology or saying, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we did it this way? And they'd be like, oh, man, didn't know we could do that. And I think a lot of that is just understanding. And I think back to when I first started working for Kid, Just to my left here is a large production area. It's a big piece of glass. It's like a 10 by 8 piece of glass. And so the staff can look into the control room here. And I just sat in there and watched him. I just literally watched him work for almost 2 weeks. And it was funny because he figured out what I was up to. And he pulled me in the office, you know, after I've been here for a couple of weeks. And he goes, so what do you think? I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, I've been watching you watching us. And so he was really interested in the fact that, you know, I was watching Kelly and how she moved in the room. And if Al, you know, needed to get something from an intern, did he need to be in a different seat? Or was his mic in the right place? Or, you know, was he constantly fiddling with his headphones? Or just super stupid things like his mic boom was loose and he was on the air and constantly doing this. You know, you got to go fix that stuff. You know, you keep your eyes open. You look for things that keep them from doing their jobs efficiently and you fix it. And then you go, hey, how about I put a longer cord on that? Or would it be cool if I gave you a patch for your iPod such that you could, you know, thing you offer things rather than just waiting for things to break. And you'll be surprised that you'll all of a sudden be part of the operation rather than a result of the operation, I guess, is a way to put it.
You know, to do that kind of thing, it seems like the observation and wanting to improve the show in any way you can, like, hey, would you like an iPod patch input there? You know, a lot of engineers nowadays would counter either as an excuse or as a reason. Dude, I take care of 12 transmitter sites. I don't have time to sit and watch the morning show.
Yeah. And that's a tough thing nowadays, but I think you just have to make the time. I think you have to find a day to go sit and watch. I mean, I used to go in when I was working for Susquehanna and watch the Ticket morning show, a very dynamic group of guys, a lot of guys doing different things in there. And I'd just sit in the control room and watch. And, you know, not only because I was a fan and I loved the show, I just wanted to watch them do their jobs. And I think when you come in at the same time, when these folks come in, you realize, hey, maybe it's a little warm in here at 5 a.m. or at 4 a.m. Maybe we need to get the air conditioner turned up a little higher. Just those little things that make a big difference. And it just, you know what? Budget a day. And I know there's a lot of engineers and a lot of radio stations, and it's hard to do. But I think if you can find the time to do it, it really makes a big difference. Or assign somebody on your staff to go do it. Say, hey, you know, a young engineer goes, hey, I want you to go sit down there. Just if you notice some things in the studio that aren't working well, let me know. Or go sit with the morning show. You know, after their show, if they have a post show meeting with the PD, call the PD and say, hey, I want to sit in on your meeting. And you can talk, you know, you can listen and what they're doing on their show topic wise. Maybe they're talking about doing a bit that may have some technological applications for you to help them with. Or, you know, maybe it's just that you have a quick meeting with them about stuff that's broken in the studio that they forgot about, forgot to tell you. Oh, the printer has been out of toner for 6 weeks. You know, stupid things like that they forget to tell you, you know.
Couple times you've mentioned here newer technologies or techniques or things in the studio, and you said that you and Kid would bounce some things back and forth. I got a question. It's both for you and for Chris Tobin. How do you approach a new technology if something is presented to you? You know, hey, each of us were roughly the same age. We were each early in our engineering careers. ISDN came into play, right? And so we had to learn about that. And then,
or Switch 56, buddy.
Or Switch 56, yeah. Yeah. And then, and now more recently, well, you know, 10, 11 years ago for me, maybe a few less years ago for both of you, the whole idea of audio over IP. But there's been other, here, I'll give you a great example. AES, digital technology for audio, that passed me by completely. I never worked at a station where we needed to make a change to AES. There was no advantage that AES presented to us. We weren't buying new consoles that were all digital. I didn't need to cut my wiring in half. I would have had such a mishmash of analog and AES gear that the whole AES thing of mostly the 90s, I suppose, and early 2000s passed me by. Now,
interesting.
So I'm wondering, should I have worked harder to implement some AES? How do you look at technologies that come staring you in the face and decide this is something I'm going to do or this is something I'm not going to do? And maybe you don't have a decision tree, but maybe you give me an example of something you said, you know, that idea, you know, that's just not something we're going to do. Or like, well, remember with FM, they had that notion of the companded noise reduction in the L-R. Mm-hmm. And a few stations did that. And a lot of stations says, nah, that's just not much benefit there. How do you think about new tech that comes along? What do you decide about it?
Okay, I guess I'll jump in. Oh, go ahead. Yeah, I'll jump in. First, I want to congratulate Rob on talking about having engineers or persons sitting in with the editorial folks. I used to do that all the time, and actually I got chastised by many peers because they thought there was something wrong with that. But I used to sit in on a lot of the programming meetings with the PDs, and they were fascinated because I was able to actually talk their language. So I think that helps. Yep. That's the other part. You got to understand how to talk their language. And one of the morning shows I worked on, which was Nick Cannon, we sat in the meeting his first day at the radio station, the new morning show, the whole big, you know, the usual stuff that goes on with new programming change. And I'm sitting in the room, and they're going around the room introducing people. I introduce myself, and he looks at me. He's like, "Why is there an engineer in here?" I said, "I got marketing, I got programming, I got the promotions, and the other guy's the streets to people. And what are you doing here?" I was like, "Well, I thought it'd be nice to find out what it is you'd like to do to make the studio more comfortable, so you can have a better flow with the your hosts." He looks at me. He's like, "Okay, wow. Well, I don't know what to say." So there's a lot to be, you know, said about understanding, or as the saying goes, walk a mile in someone else's shoes. I can tell you it pays off. I've worked with him. I've worked with others, both in television and radio. And when I've sat in on these meetings and listened to what they said, and you're right, is the studio laid out comfortably? You point out the two large screens, which I think is excellent, which I've done in a couple of places. And again, many peers were like, "What are you doing that for? That's ridiculous. That's stupid. Why is it up there?" I'm like, "You're not using it. They are." So that dovetails in, how do I approach new technologies and what do I do? Well, let's see. Back in 1996, there was a technology called, Real Audio. And I actually was using Real Audio encoding and streaming to do live news reports from the field for a network I was working for. And the people I worked with looked at me like, "What are we doing? What is this stuff?" I was like, "Well, it's a new thing that's coming out, but I'm not sure where it's going to go yet. We still have the Switch 56 ISDN and the satellite Inmarsats that we're using." I would say approach with an open mind. If it passes you by, so be it. AES is a perfect example. I would say probably 50% of the audience that is involved in engineering over the years, AES probably passed them by. That's fine. As long as you understand it, know where it came from, where it's going, and you can move on, you'll be in great shape. Rob, it sounds like your operation, where you are, the environment you're in, is very open-minded. It allows for free thinking, I'll call it, out-of-the-box thinking, I guess, to be more, you know, in with the times. But is that what goes on where you are? Are you able to sort of take a look at something new, we'll say audio over IP, and go, "You know what, this could probably work if we do this, this, and this," and you're willing to take the arrows in the back to get through it?
Yeah, I think so. I would agree with that. Especially when Kid was here, I loved working with Kid because he loved technology. I could bring him something new and he'd be like, "He'd buy it." You know, before I'd even finish telling him, he'd say, "Go buy it." And so I had to be careful not to bring him something that I wasn't sure about. And I think it kind of came back to me to go, "All right, do I really need to do this or do I want to do it?" And if I felt like it would improve the operation, I would do it in a second. But I also had to kind of take a second look. It's kind of like do you install do you replace somebody's computer without testing it? You know, do you want to get that call the next morning? And I'm very conservative with my technology. Kirk, you probably know that I went through about 2 years of bids on Axia. You know, there were many processes before we finally purchased this guy. And it finally got to the point where I was looking at BMX Digital, like it was going to take me off the air because I couldn't get parts for it. It kind of burped on me one time. And, you know, one morning I got a call and it was dark, you know, those kinds of things. And I finally looked at Kid and I said, "We got to do this." And for other reasons of flexibility for us, it wasn't that I had to replace the console, but I wanted guys to be able to pick an audio feed off the audio network and record it or create sub mixes or, you know, we do so much crazy stuff here with Dish Nation that there's no way I could have done it, or I was trying to do it with the BMX Digital and having to do all kinds of crazy stuff in the rack room, where now I do it all in software. But that being said, I was very cautious, and Kirk will know that, you know, I had many conversations with Marty and many conversations with a few of his competitors about, okay, what's the backbone of this system, and is it tough and is it resilient? Because I cannot be off the air. I cannot have a system that's not going to work. And if it screwed up on me, I'm going to have Kid Craddock staring at me going, "What did I spend all this money on?" So it's up to us as technicians and engineers to do the legwork and do the research and really, shoot holes in it. You know, I know we all fall in love with stuff and we really want to buy it, but you have to also look at it from the perspective of, is this thing going to screw me? And I got to make sure that the technology I'm putting in, although cool and fancy and neat and awesome, has got to work. And yeah. It came down to little things like this microphone. When kids started, there was a Shure 5B hanging here. And he loved that mic. But I came in, I said, dude, I got the mic for you. You're going to love it. Popped it in. He loved it. But if it, you know, if that mic wasn't going to work for him and the proximity work that he wanted to do, then all of a sudden I had to go and swap it back out and I looked like an idiot. So, you know, it's up to us to make sure that we're doing the right thing and that the technology that we're putting in for folks is the right technology, I guess is the way to put it.
Well, you know what? You're spot on with that. I could tell you from my experience working at an old news radio station, we had a lot of technologies we were trying out for spot news coverage and other things. And one thing I did learn was working with reporters, if you could find the ones who were the tech-savvy type, they were willing to try something new because they just knew that it would make sense for them and why not, and they're willing to take the arrow, if you will, that worked. But I also will tell you, I go back to this again, I've said this to a lot of folks, and I just told a few people at a university the other day I was at, if you don't walk a mile in someone's shoes that you're working with on the other side of the technical side, so in your case, Kid Craddock, it sounds like he was a great guy to work with, then you'll really never be able to get across that divide as to, is this technology right or wrong, or am I willing to take a chance? So as you pointed out, 2 years, process, Axia or the competitors, can it do this? What's the backbone? How do I know I have five nines reliability? Will I be on the air in almost all conditions? The reason you can do that and you got to where you are is because you know what the other side wants. You understand where they're coming mm-hmm. from. So you could look at it and go, you know, that's a great box you got there. It's got nice shiny buttons. It's a lot of flashing lights. It'll look great on camera. But knowing the way my guy works, when he hits that button on the left of the blue one, that's definitely going to go off the chassis. And they'll look at you, the manufacturer. No, no, it's perfect. But you have to then go up there and go, well, let me see. And you hit it. And that's when you find out. And I've done that a couple of times. And Kirk knows that I don't hold back when it comes to certain things. I did have an Axia system in my facility. And I will tell you that we definitely put it through its paces in the early days. Yeah. But it worked. And I can honestly mm-hmm. say for 3 years, we had zero outages. And I did update the memory cards during that time while we were on the air. We did not go offline when I did it. That was also something a few of the folks in support were very panicked over. But we made it happen. Only because, what's that?
I was going to say, we got to take a break here just a second. But I hear a common theme here that we're talking about. I do want to explore it just a bit more and then get to the studio tour. And that is this notion of, you know, I'm looking at buying something, a technology, a brand, some gear. And what should I know that nobody's telling me about it? Mm. And so that's why you want to talk to some users. And stuff. But let's think about that and explore that. Right now, I want to remind our viewers and listeners you're watching and listening to This Week in Radio Tech. It's our 223rd episode. Chris Tobin is here with us, and so is Rob Chickering. He is the VP of Operations and Engineering for Yay Network and the Kid Craddock Morning Show, or the Kid Craddock in the Morning Show. So we're going to get some more tour of his studio shortly. Our show is brought to you in part by the folks at Lavo. Now, Lavo is a name that a lot of U.S. engineers are not familiar with, and it's a name that you want to learn something about. Lavo makes lots of audio consoles and routing systems, and they've been known for making great big consoles, but they do have a line of smaller consoles, and the one that they'd like you to know about is their Crystal Clear. It's the virtual radio mixing console. Now, the Crystal Clear console is a DSP engine that's a one-rack unit box. It goes in a rack, doesn't even have to be nearby. The rest of it. And the rest of it is a touchscreen computer using multi-touch technology. And on this touchscreen, there's your virtual radio console. There's a visual representation. You know, 20 years ago, I knew this was going to happen at some point, and here it is from Lavo. The functionality, you know, you can do all the things that you would with an ordinary console. It's just a touchscreen now. And like all Crystal consoles, the Crystal Clear offers integrated auto mix and auto gain. You see, a few buttons on the console do a lot of things. The auto mix function adjusts the levels of active and inactive microphones, giving a constant ambient that allows an interview to be conducted without technical operation. And then the console then manages the mic mix for you while Talent conducts the interview. The AutoMix also works perfectly with automated voiceovers live to air. So while AutoGain provides yet more simplification, this feature calibrates all mic signals at the press of a button. The operator doesn't have to understand dB values and overloads because AutoGain takes care of that automatically. Some of the other features that you'll want to know about, as I said, a multi-touch mixing control. So you can, just like a real console, you can put several fingers on the touchscreen and move faders up and down, touch a button, and move a fader at the same time if you need to. Very intuitive operation. It has three stereo mixing groups, Program 1, Program 2, and a record bus. Integrated queue or pre-fader level. That does come with metering. Programmable scene presets that recall every detail that there is there. Precision stereo PPM meters. So this is a great way to watch your metering. Plus Euro and US operating modes for fader start or button start. So whichever part of the world you grew up in and started using radio, the Lavo console, the Crystal Clear, probably operates exactly the way that you want it to. Talk buttons appear automatically on Mix Minus channel. So you can talk back to somebody who's on a Mix Minus, somebody on a codec or on a phone call. And there's support for guests with talk back to them too. Plus there are 24 sources available. Any eight can simultaneously be on the console at the same time because there are eight faders on the graphical user interface. All the audio stays in the engine. It's the PC, that is the touchscreen, is for control only. Also, there's optional Ravenna AOIP interface, and it's AES 67 compliant. So if you're worried about connecting to other studios and other AOIP systems, well, they've got you covered there. Lavo has been at the forefront of Ravenna and AES 67 development. So if you want to check out this console, let me encourage you to do so. Go to lavo.com. It's L-A-W-O, lavo.com. And look for, under products, look for their radio consoles and then find the Crystal Clear console. You'll also find a short video with Mike Dosh, who's now the director of virtual radio products there, and he's explaining the Lavo Crystal Clear console. Check him out on the web, lavo.com. Thanks again for their support of This Week in Radio Tech. All right, we're talking to Rob Chickering, the VP of Operations and Engineering for Yay Networks. Hey, Chris Tobin is along with us, too. We were just talking about something before we get into the studio tour that Rob's going to kind of take us through. And that was, you know, boy, when you're buying a piece of gear, man, maybe it's a big thing like a transmitter, or maybe you're buying a tower or a big antenna, you know, spending money. And you're my fear is that there's something about this product that I should know, maybe some bad stuff that the sales rep isn't telling me. And I'm not finding in the brochure, of course. They're only going to talk about good stuff. You know, what are people's real world experiences with this product or this technology? And hey, audio over IP or even IP connections for codecs is a big part of that for folks that haven't used it or have had a bad Skype session once in their life. Then they think IP doesn't work. How do you approach that trepidation or that doubt about a new technology or product? Let's check in with Rob first. Go ahead, Rob.
I ask a lot of questions, and I think I spoke to probably four or five folks in your list of users and asked them questions that are pertinent to me, because everybody's use of technology is the same and in many ways is very different. So it kind of depends on their, you know, what's their 24/7 upcycle? Is it, you know, if it goes down, do they have four backups? You know, so their decision process might be a little different. I got one studio, and so when I looked at the architecture of the system, I designed mine for my setup. But I think you've got to look at the technology and make sure it applies. And I think in many ways, I think the engineer now is handed a list from corporate that says, here are the five things you're going to buy this year. I think probably what's changed in the older days is we used to submit, I don't know if it still happens because I'm not in corporate radio anymore, thank God, but you submitted those capital requests and it was up to you to make sure that you were buying the stuff that you needed. And again, if that console went down, corporate's going to call you and go, hey, you bought this, you know, what were you thinking? So I don't know, did I answer the question or did I jump around it? I'm not sure.
Yes, both. Let's see what Chris Tobin has to say, because Chris is the kind of guy, and like you, Rob, but you know, Chris will just jump into a new technology if he sees promise into it. He'll figure out how to make it work, because you know, you get that sense of whether or not is this fundamentally flawed or is this fundamentally good, and maybe manufacturers' implementations aren't quite right. So Chris, why don't you address this thing about trepidation or fear of a new technology or product?
Well, you know, I would say I can assure you that in the early days of my my time in learning technology, and it still continues the learning part, I burned myself many a time, literally and figuratively, RF burns, that is, and learned a lot from that. And I have to say, back in my youth, not that I'm not young now, I worked at part-time in a cobbler store or shoe store. And I'll never forget the guy I worked with. He was like 60 years old. He was, you know, fixing shoes, making shoes for, you know, life. He said to me, he says, "Understand how the shoe is made." I said, "Well, yeah, it's made out of leather." "No, no, no, no. Leather is easy. That's just the cow." He goes, "Understand how the parts come together and how they can be resilient on their interaction. Learn that on anything you do and you'll be in great shape." Fast forward to, say, I'll use my Axia install as an example, because I did get a lot of pushback on that technology. And everyone looked at me and said, "Why would you think to do it that way when it's using, you know, Ethernet switches, or it does this, it does that?" And I looked at them, I said, "Well, let's see. If it's using an Ethernet switch and they're preferring Cisco or the high-end HP, those are tier one products. So there must be something to it. What are we missing? Why are we thinking this is wrong?" And they give me examples, like, you know, you say you use Skype and it fails, and it's like, "Oh, Skype failed, the IP doesn't work." I talked to some of the IT people that were telling me that why they thought this would be a problem, and they explained to me their woes. And they explained to me what their problems were in their world. I'm like, "Wait a minute. You've got a lot of tools at your fingertips you haven't used. It's not my fault you chose not to go down that path." So understand what it is. You know, jump in maybe both feet if you've really done your homework, or one foot. Just know it. I mean, you know, in the case of IP, it's a known entity. You control what it does. It doesn't control you. If you choose, like I've told many folks I've worked with for outside broadcasts of remotes, you control the environment, you have a better chance of a remote going off successfully. You let the remote environment control you, and I can guarantee you $100 on the table, it'll fail, or it'll have a very poor outcome. And anyone who's done these types of things know exactly what I'm talking about. Once you take that thinking and apply it to your new technology approach, trust me, it works. Will you get burned? There's always the chance. But remember, learn from your failures and you'll succeed at a greater pace. Don't learn from your failures and you'll never know what it means to succeed. You'll just sort of go with the flow. And that's the difference. And I'm telling you, it works. I told you earlier, Real Audio I was using in 1996 to do network audio newscasts. People looked at me like I was nuts. I was like, "Well, how else are we going to get this audio out of a remote location where I was covering a plane crash in Nova Scotia on the middle of an island?" And they're like, "Well, we got the Inmarsat, but we have a data link. What can we do?" And my TV counterpart said, "How did you guys get the audio out of that location? We can't get a KU truck in there to get video." Guess what? Good Morning America was using my idea to do audio for the B-roll, but they had a still shot of a reporter on location with us in the radio network. Okay. Now, if you took today's thinking and said, "What are you, nuts?" That was like the equivalent of Skype, but without the video component. That's what you do. You look at it and you say, "I know this. I know this. I can do this. I can control it. I'm going to make it happen." It worked. Did we have a few failures on that project? Oh, yes, we did. But the end result was they needed to get something out of a remote location, and we found something that worked. Today, you can do the same thing. Now, it's even easier in some respects. But yeah, I think Rob's definitely done it at his place. I know you've had stuff come through there. You're like, "Oh boy, we shouldn't have done that, but it worked."
Yeah, and I think you said something that kind of helped me answer that question better. And so I'll jump back on it. Is I think when I was designing this system or laying it out and looking at some of the competitors, I think what it came down to was I wanted one finger to point if something went wrong. And I think when you're adding, you know, different manufacturers' equipment in between power stations, or I've got a Cisco switch here, or five Cisco switches, and, you know, I got a little gun-shy of some of the architecture that I was going to have to do with other systems, where I was going to have multiple switches everywhere. And I was like, okay, if that switch goes out, I'm screwed. I've lost multiple mix engines. I don't know which mix isn't working. I'm going to be chasing tails. And it's not like you can grab a butt set and start figuring out where audio is going. It's like you got to figure out what lights aren't blinking. And so when I looked at this system, and with any system, is you look where it's going to fail. It's going to break. Something will break. I mean, you just can't control everything. Now, thank goodness, knock wood, nothing's broken in here. But if something did break, I would know how to work around it, or I would have a workaround. And so I think in your design and in your research of a product, figure out what possibly could break. If it's going to break, who are you going to call? And if it's going to be, oh, well, that's not really ours, but we put it in our box, be careful with that. You know, you want to be able to go to a company, and Axia is a perfect example of, make a call to tech support and it's their gear. They're going to, you know, you're going to get an answer from a tech who knows the manufacturer because it's their stuff. It's not like, oh, that's our mother. That's somebody else's motherboard that we put in there, but we don't know that, you know, oh, we just heard that they're locking up now. Those are the things I think you have to look at nowadays where, you know, things are combined together. You've got different products and different, you know, everything's told to talk together, but, you know, sometimes they don't, or you didn't do a switch config right in a Cisco switch. Oh, you know, may not cause a problem now, but all of a sudden you've got, jittery audio and it's staticky and you're not like, what the heck's going on? Well, is it the Cisco switch? Is it the, you know, is it the broadcast manufacturer's piece of equipment? Which is it? So I think you have to minimize those kind of conversations so you can quickly fix things and have workarounds.
Well, you know, on that note, you just reminded me of when I do look at technologies and stuff, I do talk to customers. I ask for the manufacturer or representative to give me a list of customers that are willing to talk. And I will tell you, with the Axia project, and this was something I know I definitely had an argument with a couple of people at support, but I prevailed anyway. One of their customers had a very nice system install, very well laid out, just everything as it should be, which you would expect in a traditional IT deployment that was required for the switches. However, that customer had a catastrophic failure take place, and I observed it, and I was like, wow, this is interesting. So let me get this straight, the way this whole thing went down, and they recovered, and they were able to get things back, but it was an interesting failure point. So I looked at my setup and said, gee, I can't afford that. I'm a 24-hour news station, and that definitely will definitely get somebody's attention. So I took the approach of each studio. We had four studios that go to air every 20 minutes. We rotate through the studios for the newscasts. So instead of doing a single core approach where you could do a Cisco switch and the high-speed bus on the back, you'd make it appear as one virtual IP address, I decided that each studio would have its own switch. And then the fifth switch was in the rack, was programmed with all the protocols necessary. So if we had to, one switch dies, only one studio out of four goes down, the other three continue to function, and we can move all those Cat5 cables down to the fifth switch and be back online if we've moved over. And I will tell you that I've talked to several CCNEs about this approach, and they could not understand why you want to do that when you should be able to do the master and slave approach with the Cisco switches and the high-speed bus in the back. And I gave them the example of the other customer, and they said, yeah, that scenario could happen. I said, well, I can't afford that scenario.
No.
You don't understand. When it hits the fan, my radio station is where people tune. I can't have that.
Yeah, it's silence, yeah. not data.
Exactly. So it's important to definitely question or ask the questions of the current users and try and listen carefully or observe where things have gone wrong and be gentle about how you ask, okay, system's working great. When did you have a bad time? I'm curious. Or what did you learn from the, incidents that took place, the learning curve, the growing pains, whatever you want to call it. That's the secret sauce that you'll find out. That's when you'll be able to sit there and say, do I take this technology product because it has the common platform, or do I go with the other guys that sort of do this motherboard in a box and I think it's going okay. And then Rob's right. It's you really need to understand the big picture and then bring it down to the granular part where you say, this will work and I'll get my 5.9s of reliability and I'll be in great shape. So, but yeah, that was, I definitely broke the mold on that one, but it paid off. I can assure you, we had a couple of incidences where, matter of fact, when I was switching memory cards, that's the reason I could get away with it, because the switches weren't talking to each other.
Let's jump right into show and tell time. Rob Chickering, you went to some trouble to get us a camera shot into this good looking Kid Craddock studio there. Why don't you show us around, and I want you to save the little thing we talked about for last.
Okay.
If you would. But yeah.
All right. I'll try to talk loud so I stay on mic here with that gate. This is operator's position. So you've got multiple OPEX screens for playback of drops, bits. There's your obligatory Axia screen, and there's another OPEX screen there. Kid was kind of old school. Likes the old 360 system. He could roll with that. This is kind of the cool part of the studio. He'd like to play piano on the fly. So
oh my goodness, look at that! It's a keyboard of a different kind.
Yes, that's right. And there are the regular keyboards right there.
By the way, how do you solve the keyboard problem? Do you have multiple keyboards in there for different computers?
There's one keyboard for the OpEx that's right here, and that just slides under. That gets used very infrequently because most of it's just mousing and searching through on the Windows. And then there's a I've become the big fan of the wireless keyboard in the control room. It's just they do get a little messed up, but we do have a lot of markings like, hey, this is the left screen mouse, you know, things like that.
Okay.
You know, or hey, this black mouse, it looks like every other mouse, is the OpEx mouse. So marking everything was very fortunate. And then, like I showed you before, that looks into the control room, and that's got the larger element surface. This is a smaller one, and this is this was kind of when we talk about technology and taking risks. When I told Kid he was going to go from 26 faders to 10, there was a little bit of a revolt on my hand, so I had to kind of walk him through the whole process. But because he used to have control of the on-air three-pot next-gen playback, so that was playing back the log. He also had all of his button bar playback. He had IRs, phone pots. He had all the mics for the hosts. So basically, I took all of that out of his control and left him with, you know, things to play back audio. So I really wanted him to operate kind of more as an island with a board op operating out of the control room with all the major stuff and doing the master mix, because his mix wasn't always the greatest. You know, his mic would be 20 dB hotter than everybody else's, and it would be
of course.
Yeah, of course. It's all more me. So the console is kind of the ability for the console to be agile was a key for us, because we operate in here in two modes. We have an on-air mode, and then we have a record mode. And the record mode is mainly used when we shoot television. Now, back when we put this in, we were doing television during the breaks of radio. So we would finish a radio break, go into a nine-minute, you know, silent point where the affiliates took over. During that 9 minutes, they would be shooting television. So we designed the console. The problem with that was that the audio feeds to the TV guys had to be different depending on what mode we were in. So we did a lot of back-end trickery where we have a mode in the console. We have a mode switch built into a soft panel. So on-air mode and record mode. And in record mode, the mics for the hosts are rerouted to these faders. He loses this right-hand automation. And then when he goes back to on-air mode, he gets his right screen automation back, and he doesn't have the mics any longer. In the back end, in Pathfinder, we're then switching on the fly, depending on the profile that's been pulled up on this console, what is going to the TV cameras. So the TV cameras would get a mix out of the other room, or they would get a mix out of this room. Now, it became a little problematic when we started doing hybrid feeds, because Kid had two phone hybrid pots in here, and we have the other two phone hybrid pots in there. Okay, so now we've got a problem, because I have to, what happens when the mics are in here? Then the mix minus is okay. But when the mics are in the other room and Kid is only in here, then the mix minuses have to be different. So again, in that case, we do, based on a profile change, we swap a V-mix going to the hybrids, and we created a sub V-mix basically of the mics. So we did there's a lot of work going on in Pathfinder just with this little button change here, what's going to the cameras, what isolated feed goes to our logger in the back. So we record an isolated mic feed that we have, a mic mix, so we have no program elements or anything like that. So if we need something clean, we can pull it off for a later bit, or you can re-edit a segment without a music bed underneath it. So there's a lot of back-end switching that we do. The other thing that I was able to do with the system is I didn't buy an intercom. We had an old SAS intercom system, and so using Axia, we just basically, it's a little bright there, but basically all these buttons are intercom positions, and using the X nodes, we were able to break one channel of the headphones. So we created basically a V-mix for every headphone position. And in those V-mixes is every host's mic and every talkback origination point. And on the press of a button, it routes that feed. It kills what's going to the normal headphone feed to the right channel, and it routes that mic to their headphones on a button press. And then a button release, they get their audio back. So we basically built the intercom in the back end of the system.
This is like deja vu. I, with the help of one of the Axia tech support guys, I did exactly the same thing for Blair Garner and America's Morning Show in Nashville because they wanted to be able to have that kind of connectivity back and forth without an intercom system per se. And so, that's very cool. Nice work.
Okay. Yeah, and then inside the control room, we use the normal talkback buttons based on the assignment of the pots to do talkback to the host position. So each host position
they've got a 5-button panel that goes to external locations like the producer, the production studio, screeners booth, that kind of thing. They can hit a button and talk, and then they can talk to each other as well. So they can communicate within the show pretty nicely. I just couldn't have both channels of the headphones breaking. That would have been a deal ender for Kid, because he had 5 or 6 people talking in his ear at one time, and he would literally be saying something on the air, talk back, and let up the button and keep talking, and he would be barking out instructions. So the talkback system had to be super clean and one channel break. So the X node made that possible. Previous nodes, it wouldn't have been a problem. So thank God we bought the X nodes.
Wow.
I think that's kind of the basics here. So the nice thing is now that when we're doing television, they go into record mode after the show. We pre-tape or kind of re-rack the last hour of the show for previous segments. So that's running out of the control room. And then in this room, they start doing TV production. So the rooms can separate and operate as 2 separate rooms. And then actually, we leased that other studio out to a country show. Or we used to lease out to a country show. So they were actually doing a country show out of there in the evening. So we can actually use this for another studio if we needed to. The systems are basically... I'll give you...
Oh, yeah. So, there's some power stations there.
Yeah, so there's dual power stations in both rooms. So basically, the rooms are standalone rooms. The power stations are linked back to a 2960 Cisco on the 1 gig side. And we talk about failure. Basically, I know it sounds kind of weird. There's a female RJ45 barrel connector sitting back, basically on top of the 2960. So I could literally walk in there, unplug the 2960, butt the 2 connectors back together, and I'm back on the air.
Yeah.
Because all I'll lose is the IP connect or the Axia connectivity of machines that are sitting across that 2960. So everything else is home run back to the power stations. Yeah, nodes and everything are sitting on the power stations.
I'm glad you said that, because if I was the bean counter, say, now wait a minute, why did I write the check for the 2960 when you can replace it with a piece of plastic?
yeah, exactly. But yeah, all the PCs that are recording off the audio network, but anything critical is basically home run from TOC back to the power stations and connected to the power stations. So Vox Pros, OpEx machines, they're all talking right on the power station network side, and then ancillary stuff, they're hung across the 2960. So if the 2960 went out, I could butt those 2 connectors back together, and I'm back on the air. And also I have like analog backups as well and that kind of stuff. So if for some reason I couldn't get the 2 to talk to each other, I literally have 2 program feeds coming out of both consoles that I could get back on the air if I needed to.
Now, most broadcasters who get an AOIP system, whether it's an Axia or whether it's one of the competitors, probably half or more of them don't need a PC-based routing system. And for Axia, you mentioned the word Pathfinder a couple of times there, more than twice. So that's the PC-based big honking switch routing system that takes place. When did it become clear that you were going to need that level of routing?
Real quickly. Yeah, when I realized that I wanted to have some agility for Kid to do headphone switching, I knew when I asked the first question of Mike Ewell, okay, I want to do the intercom inside the system. He says, okay, Pathfinder can do that. So immediately I started figuring out that Pathfinder was my path to success. So mark that one down, Kirk. So so we were able to do a lot of work. And then once we realized we had Pathfinder, we're like, well, wait a minute, can we do that with Pathfinder? I can't tell you how many times we said like, okay, so when we're doing the country show, I want the country show to air over the speakers in the building. But when we're doing the Kid Craddock show, I want the webcast to feed over the speakers in the building. And I looked at, I go, okay, tell you what, we'll set up the profile change. And so whenever Pathfinder sees the profile change for the country show, it'll put that over the speakers in the hallways. And so it's just all those little things that you want to have happen in the background automatically, Pathfinder takes care of it for you.
Guys, you know what? We've got a hard out time here in about 3 or 4 minutes, and this is just fascinating. Kid, I'm Kid. Rob, I hope you'll come back on the show sometime. This has just been great. And maybe you can show us where things have gone. We got one more sponsor on the show, and hey, this is the first episode we've ever had 3 sponsors on the show. And our 3rd sponsor is Axia. And hey, Rob showed you around an Axia console there quite a bit. So I just want to reemphasize something about Axia that is just amazing, and that is this incredible flexibility in routing. And not, of course, there are lots of systems that can do routing, but with Axia, people who understand radio have designed the controls that tell the routing what to do. And those controls are stuff that you're either familiar with anyway or just make just common sense, duh. And so when Rob was showing you, hey, change where the phones are going to, we have to also change where the mix minuses are coming from. Normally, you don't have to do that kind of stuff in a typical broadcast situation, but Rob there has a very untypical broadcast situation where they're doing multiple studios work with the same callers. When they're changing from the country show back to the Kid Craddock show, they want to change the speakers in the hallway. Well, Pathfinder is indeed the path, the key to get that done. It's just an amazingly powerful piece of software. It's really quick. It runs on a Windows server, and I didn't mean for this ad to be about Pathfinder, although it certainly can be, because it's just it makes you able to do so many things that you used to have to build little blue boxes and Diddy boxes and build up relay panels and all this specialized stuff. And once you understand the if then else stuff in Pathfinder, the conditions and what they're going to do about it, you can start to build this stuff up in a matter of minutes. The tech support guys at Axia are glad to help you out in programming Pathfinder. As I mentioned, as Rob mentioned, and I said, hey, I did the same thing. They wanted some intercom capability, but they didn't really want to buy the Axia intercom. So they didn't really need that. They didn't need that kind of flexibility, but they need to push a button and talk to everybody, or push a button or let go of a button and hear everybody. So that's the kind of things that Pathfinder can do. Could move in a vMix. Rob talked several times about vMix, and this is something that we've built into every console that Axia makes, these virtual mixers. The small consoles have one virtual mixer. The larger consoles now have 16 virtual mixers. I use them all the time when I install Axia stuff, even if it's just to mix, program, and preview into the same speakers so that you can use the same speakers for both of these functions that, here in the U.S., we typically did separate sets of speakers and with still individual volume controls for them. They work just like they always have. So the flexibility of Axia and all the stuff that's built in, that a lot of the stuff you don't know you're going to need until you think, hey, I want to do this. Can I do it? Call support. Of course you can do that. There's 25 stations already doing that, and they'll walk you through how to do that kind of thing. And then what's cool is when your brain gets wrapped around, you the engineer, you get wrapped around Axia pretty well and Pathfinder, and you know what it can do, and then you start thinking of stuff yourself. So oftentimes the sales reps or the support guys from Telos, Omnia, Axia will be out in the field, and we'll find something amazing that an Axia user has done that we never thought of, and yet they're doing it. Some of that stuff is probably right there in the Kid Craddock studio where Rob Chickering is right now. Rob, right now we got just about 1 minute left. Show us real quick the cool audio routing that you did to change your voice.
And this is right up the alley of Pathfinder. So you've got a standard soft panel button there. And so you've got TC, which is a TC Electronics processor, a Harmonizer H3000, and a phone. And Kid liked to bounce between these different sounds on his mic, but I didn't want to have him have to move around different faders, turn things on and off, pull up a different source. So at a push of a button,
this is CNN. And I can undo
that. And now my voice is back. So
you can go back and forth with the process.
Back and forth. And then this one's set for a high pitch.
So I can, this was a voice that he always did. It was a wife of one of the co-hosts. Her name was Kinsey. So I was like, oh my God. And
turn it back off and he could go back and forth. And then
and we're on the phone now. So,
So the phone becomes the mic.
Yep, exactly. And then back. So all of that's done. It's manual. It's just vMixes set up and then Pathfinder turning on and off sources depending on what the soft buttons are done.
That's the way it works with this creative talent. They tell you what they want to be able to do. And the funny thing is, the more you do for them, then they think other stuff for you to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I will tell you, I got a lot of audio switchers sitting in a pile back in the storage room because they all went away. My racks are almost empty. And, when Marty was here, I have four runs of 24 multi-pair that are empty.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
So it's, no more multi-pair. It's all Cat 6, and I love life.
We are out of time. I want to thank Chris Tobin in New Jersey for being with us. Chris Tobin, the best-dressed engineer in radio. Where can people reach you, Chris, for your IP solutionist magic?
Just at support@ipcodex.com. Real simple, real easy to remember.
At ipcodex.com. All right. You are there to help people out in this brave new world of IP audio.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for being with us, Chris Tobin. Appreciate you. Rob Chickering from Dallas, Texas, the VP of Operations Engineering for Yay Networks. Thank you for being with us, Rob, and the great tour.
No problem. Yeah, glad I could be here for you guys.
And thanks to Andrew Zarian back at in New York at the GFQ Network for switching and producing the show. We appreciate him very much. We've got more incredible guests coming up in the next few weeks. Let me see if I've got one handy here for you. Give me just a second. There we go. Oh, hey, next Thursday, Scott Feibusch is on the show. He's been on before. He's always got the biggest updates in what's happening with towers and tower sites and the skinny on engineering and happenings around the area. And in 2 weeks from now, Chris Alexander will be with us. He's the director of engineering for Crawford Broadcasting. He'll be on with us. So join us next time for This Week in Radio Tech. Our show's been brought to you by the Telos HX6, the Lavo Crystal Clear console, and the Axia Audio Routing System and Consoles. Thanks to all of our sponsors for their great support. And tell your friends about This Week in Radio Tech. See our Facebook page. Like that if you would. Subscribe to our Twitter feed, Twert Show, and visit the website, thisweekinradiotech.com. You can also see our shows even quicker at gfqnetwork.com. All right, guys, we'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.